Good morning, Wake Up HEC, Cris Oviedo, Brendan Byrne, coming to you this morning from the basement in McEwen Hall right here in Howard Community College.
Beautiful basement on a beautiful Thursday morning.
And it's Thursday morning and it's still a little rainy and a little chilly,
yeah.
But it's going to get better. We're going to get into the 70s, it's going to be sunny,
oh, yeah.
That's what I hear. So finally spring decided to show up for a day. Hopefully stays again a little longer.
That'll be nice.
And yep, if you're watching, and I know you're listening at Third Voice and you're wondering who that is, that's your guest for today. That's Staff Sergeant Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure if I should say your full name or just your last name. I know that there's a certain protocol, right?
No, that's fine. You can say Staff Sergeant Campbell. You can say Staff Sergeant LaWayne B. Campbell. That's my full name. But we'll just go with Staff Sergeant Campbell for the day.
All right, there you go. So good morning to you, and thank
good
you
morning
for coming in this morning. And today we're celebrating Armed Forces Day. I know we're about 2 days early because that's on May 18th.
Yeah, Saturday.
Right, so big party, I guess, right? Since it falls on a Saturday.
It'll be good times, definitely.
And we're here to talk about, to find out a little more what, you know, being in the Army is all about, and I know that that is a career that entails a lot of sacrifices. It's I respect it a lot, and I'll tell you a little bit about how I almost signed up but didn't, and my reasons for not signing up. But before we talk about all of that, I actually want to get to know you a little more, and I want to hear your story. I want to know how did you take that jump? How did you decide to just join the forces? Because like I said, I was very close to it and I couldn't do it. I could not make that sacrifice.
So for me, I guess it all began back when I was a little kid, honestly.
Okay.
It was joining the military was always something that was something that I saw myself doing.
Interesting.
It would go away. It would be there, go away, be there, go away. And actually, I was in college and was in the ROTC program there. And I was like, okay.
ROTC stands for?
ROTC is Reserve Officer Training Corps.
Okay.
It's the pathway to becoming a United States Army officer.
Okay.
And at the time, I was like, you know what? This actually isn't for me. I don't see myself wanting to join the Army.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, nah.
How old were you then?
About that time, I was maybe 19 or 20.
Okay.
Mind you, my father, he'd been serving almost, I think my dad had been in, at that point, maybe about 17 years. Active in our reserves as well. He actually retires this October.
Oh, well,
after about 20, I forget how many years of service. My dad has, I think, almost close to 30 years of service.
Wow.
But he kind of laid the foundation where he never said for my siblings or myself to join, but he said, if that's something that you want to do, I'll support you.
Mm.
But fast forward from, I graduated from college, I'm in a part of the workforce, and at that point it was about 2008 and the housing market tanked, and it was one of those situations where they came in and said, all right, Brad, well, we're going to have to let you go, or you can work this kind of temporary job. I say to myself, I need something that's going to be stable, and let me go talk to a recruiter, you know,
mm-hmm.
Something where I know I'll have a stable income and be able to provide for myself, and when I decide to have a family, provide for my family as well. So I sat down with the recruiter, everything went well, and April 30th, I'll never forget the date, April 30th, 2010, I enlisted in the Army as an intelligence analyst.
Okay.
And that was 2010, and this August, after, you know, everything, I will have served for 9 years.
Then. 9 years. Wow.
Yeah. Cause I joined in April and then I had a little bit of time and then I left for basic training, August 30th.
Now you have a cool perspective because you've had the perspective of the child whose parent mm-hmm. was serving and then you are now serving. So
yes,
let's talk about that first experience. You know, how was it living with somebody who was actively in the forces and growing up with somebody who was always away? Because that's my idea of somebody who serves. It's like somebody who's always away.
So the way that it worked out, so it wasn't until I was in college that my dad went. He was a part of what they call the active guard reserve. It's kind of an in-between between active duty and the Army reserves.
Okay.
Where he works at the reserve unit all the time. So prior to that, when I was in high school or what have you, he did his deployment to Iraq. He went to Iraq once while I was in high school, and then again while I was in college.
Now, what was his career? Because I understand what I learned from my couple meetings with a recruiter is that you can select a career, which I did not know that until I actually, you know, sat down with somebody and they said, I thought it was just a straight path, and everybody who came in had this one path already paid for them, and that was it. But it's really a very ample career where you basically choose where you want to serve.
Without a doubt. For my father, he chose 88 Mike, which is transportation. He drives trucks.
Okay.
And that related to his civilian job where he used to drive tractor trailers across the country. That was what he did before he decided to go back for AGR. But while he was serving, while I was in high school, he was in Iraq, and he was actually able to make it back home in enough time to see me graduate from high school. And he was also able to even when he deployed when I was in college, he was there for college graduation as well. There were some holidays where he wasn't able to be there, but he always made sure he, you know, would call us, wish us a Merry Christmas and whatnot. I think that was only one Christmas he wasn't able to be there, but it wasn't like he was gone all the time.
Okay.
That wasn't the perspective that I had at all. It was one of those where, okay, Dad's going to deploy for a little bit. Skype became the you know, go-to as a family. And that actually was what carried over when I was deployed. I deployed to Afghanistan in 2012. And for myself and my wife and even my my mom and my siblings, the way I would communicate with them, I would go ahead and hop on Skype, you know, see how they were doing. And I think that was like a 8.5 hour difference. So my wife would, I'll be heading to work. My wife would be getting home from work type of deal. But I always made sure I, you know, just said, hey, how you doing? Love you. And went on about my day.
Right. Did you travel much with your dad? Because I know that's another type of experience that I've heard from a lot of people whose parents are actively working for the armed forces, that they end up traveling around the world because they're deployed, I guess is the right word. Correct.
So the way that it works out is, when my dad, where he was AGR, he did a lot of, he moved from bases here in the U.S.
Okay.
So he didn't do that much traveling outside of the country.
Mm-hmm.
When he first joined back when I was a lot younger, he was stationed in Germany. My mom and I, we didn't go with him for that.
Okay.
They call it a PCS, a permanent change of station. That's where he was stationed for 3 years, and then he came back. But for myself, outside of the country, I was stationed in Germany for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I, we were there. We enjoyed a lot of traveling. Our daughter, who's now 3, Peyton, she was born in Germany as well.
Okay.
But it's been great. So, I mean, being stationed in Germany, we were able to travel to so many different countries. Italy, Czech Republic, the UK. We traveled to a lot of different countries. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was even kind of cool. We had the opportunity for our anniversary gift. My wife, she paid for us to go to Rome for a 4-day weekend.
Oh, how nice.
And we were able to travel Rome. We even had breakfast at the Vatican. I didn't even know that was a thing that we were able to do.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, you can.
Been there, yeah.
Yeah, and what you can do, you can actually go on, reserve it, and what have you. You can have an American-style breakfast at the Vatican.
That's pretty cool.
That's very cool. It was neat. That's one of the things that appealed to me. I was like, oh, well, you can get to travel, and you can get to see the world. You're still working, but, you know, you can, I mean, it's kind of like a benefit. So just to tell you a little bit about my story, same time frame as yours, 2008. I was in the real estate business at the time. My husband was in the mortgage business, so we were a team. And as you said, the market just completely tanked, so we needed to do something, right? And the military, I started looking at it and kind of like thinking about it. And so I started going and I started talking to a recruiter and having meetings. And I remember very clearly, like on our last meeting, he said, all you have to do right now is just sign. And then, you know, off you go. And when he said that, I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What do you mean I have to go? What do you mean I don't just sign and stay here locally? And I was like, how about my kids? My son, I think at the time, was not even a year old. So it was really, really difficult. And that's what kept me. That's what kept me from moving forward and signing up. I could not leave my child. It was just too much. I was not able to do it, and that's why I didn't sign. But I learned a lot about the great benefits that you guys offer. You know, education, I mean, there's just so much. And that's, like I said, when I learned that I could even go and apply, I always knew that I wanted to be in radio and video production. And I learned through these meetings that I could do that mm-hmm. with the Armed Forces. So can we expand a little bit on that? You know, some of the benefits that, you know, joining offers to those who might be, you know, considering becoming part of the Army.
Okay. For someone who's interested in the Army, of course, there are tons of benefits. For those that choose to do it full-time, like myself, for active duty, there's free health care, there's free dental, free vision. That's not only for you, but for your family as well. Mm-hmm. There's educational benefits. They have now the Forever GI Bill, which will offer you almost upwards of $71,000 for those that are on active duty.
Wow.
You also receive what they call tuition assistance. Tuition assistance is roughly about $4,000 annually to pay for your education, where you don't even have to tap into the GI Bill. Mm-hmm. So it's very it's very probable for someone who's serving full time to graduate, to pursue their bachelor's degree, graduate with their bachelor's, and or go on to their master's and not even use their GI Bill.
Mm.
And that GI Bill is there for the service member, but also there for their family as well.
So what is the GI Bill, since we're separating them?
Okay, so the GI Bill is provided for those who serve. The way that it's set up is, you initially, when you join, you contribute $100 each month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. After that first year of contributing $100 each month, you contribute $1,200, you get $71,000 in return.
Okay.
I think that's a pretty good deal. But you're able to do that, and that allows you to be able to have access to funding for your education. That covers your tuition, books, things of that nature.
Okay. Is that just for yourself, or can that be transferred over to your kids later?
That can be transferred over to my kids. I can transfer it to my spouse.
Oh.
So my wife or my kids can utilize my GI Bill.
Okay.
I mean, where I'm able to use my tuition assistance for my master's now, when I decide to take the uniform off, either I will have transferred it to Peyton, and I also have a son, Langston.
Mm-hmm.
I can either give it to them, or my wife can use it for a doctor's degree.
So that stays with you forever, and it has to be used for education purposes.
Yes.
So even if you, like you said, you just hang your uniform and you move on to different things, that's still yours to take.
Yes.
That's wonderful. But within the career, there's education assistance. Can
yes.
we talk a little bit about that?
So with that, every installation has what they call an education center.
When you say installation, you mean?
Sorry. installation is every base.
Okay.
Be it Army, Air Force, Marine Corps, Naval Station, whatever the case may be, where you are stationed, there's a place for you to go to pursue classes.
Okay.
For instance, when I was stationed in Germany, you had institutions like UMUC was there, Oklahoma was there, Central Texas College, and a few others were there on the installation for us to go to the education center. You could, of
like
course,
in base.
Like on the base,
oh,
yes.
Wow.
You can either do online classes, of course, or you can actually have you can go to the education center, sit in a classroom type setting in a brick and mortar building, and have a professor standing right there in front of you.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. So let's talk about the recruiting process itself.
Okay.
I remember just sending an email or making a phone call, something like that. Somebody contacted me back, and then we had a meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the people usually do that. Is that how it works? If I'm interested, I reach out to you guys, or are you guys reaching out to people?
It goes both ways.
Okay.
The way that we do a lot of our prospecting, or, you know, reaching out to individuals, we'll give them a phone call. We may do we do telephonic. We may shoot them a text. We use social media via Facebook, Instagram. There are a lot of different avenues in which we use to reach out to people to introduce them to the idea of maybe joining the Army.
Mm-hmm.
But those are some of the approaches that we utilize. And then we have some individuals that approach us and say, hey, this is something that I've been thinking about doing. How do I start this?
Okay.
And that opens up the conversation. And the way that we do it is, one, we do what we call a pre-qualification. We have to make sure that they are pre-qualified for military service, not just with the Army, but for any branch of service for that
okay.
matter.
And what qualifies as that? You know, what are you looking for in that pre-qualification?
In the pre-qualification, what we're looking for someone from age 17 to 34.
Okay.
They have to have a certain height and weight requirements that we have.
Okay.
That's one of the biggest obstacles that we have is, believe it or not, unfortunately, a lot of Americans aren't as quite physically fit as they once were.
Okay.
I'm shocked.
So just making sure that they meet the height and weight requirements. As far as the educational aspect, you either have to be a high school graduate or at least a holder of a GED.
Okay.
And, of course, if you have an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree or a higher degree of education, that will benefit you as far as how you come into the Army. Besides being medically qualified and having those educational, you can't have anything legally. I know back in the day it used to be that, hey, go to war, go to jail type of deal. It's not that case anymore. You can't have any open cases, can't have anything pending, anything like that, and come talk to a recruiter. You have to have all your legal issues settled.
Okay.
And, make sure that they're taken care of before you sit down with the recruiter. If all those things check out, you don't have any medical issues, any outstanding, where you have to maybe take medication on a regular basis, things like that, you can definitely be pre-qualified for military service.
Okay. And so once somebody signs up, right, and says, yes, I want to do it, and you guys determine that they are qualified, what happens right after you sign up? What's the first step coming into the Army?
Okay. So the way it's set up, after we pre-qual them, we sit down, we go over everything with them. We give them what we call a practice test, make sure it's a enlistment screening test to let them know how they will actually perform on the ASVAB, or the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery.
Okay.
The ASVAB is kind of like the SAT for the military.
Okay.
And it's actually a good predictor for how you would perform on the SAT, actually. But the ASVAB allows us to... the ASVAB actually allows us to determine how you would perform, where your skills are best utilized. Okay. After determining how you perform on the ASVAB, that can be taken in our office, or you can go to Fort Meade and take the ASVAB there. Once you've taken the ASVAB, we then receive your scores. That lets us know that, hey, you've excelled in this area or this area. And
is it like an aptitude test then?
It is. It's an aptitude test. Okay. And it's broken down in about 10 sections. It has arithmetic, reading, vocab, a lot of different things. Like I said, it's very similar to the SAT. And once all that's identified, you then sit down with your recruiter, and we're able to pull the jobs and say, hey, these are the jobs that you qualify for.
Okay.
And the thing that I love about being in the Army is the fact that it's never going to be myself or my counterpart, Sergeant Floyd, saying, all right, so you've qualified for these jobs here. This is what I need you to do, okay? So I'm going to slot you for this job.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's never that case at all with the Army. The way that it works out for us, you've qualified for these jobs. You tell me, all right, hey, Sergeant Campbell, you know what? I have an interest in, say, IT, or I want to do something in the medical profession. Okay, as long as you have the qualifying scores for those jobs,
okay,
you can do that. And that's how it works out.
Now, let's say, for instance, you said medical right now, right? And let's say somebody comes in, but the initial qualifications, he doesn't have the numbers, I guess, right? The mm-hmm. percentages that you guys see. Is there a possibility for him to maybe get there later and transfer over? Like if he says, okay, I'm going to stick with IT for now, but I'm going to work towards switching over to medical. Is that something that can be done?
That's actually a very good question. That's a good segue into it. So with the Army, the one thing that you're able to do, you're able to do what we call re-enlist. So the Army is based on contracts.
Okay.
Like, for instance, my initial contract when I joined as an intelligence analyst was 3 years, 34 weeks. I'll never forget that as long as I live. So after that initial 3 years and 34 weeks, they have what they call a career counselor. And that's a job in the Army as well for someone who's been in it for a little bit longer. But I sat down with a career counselor and they said, all right, Sergeant Campbell, what is it that you want to do? Do you want to stay in? Do you want to get out? And that's when you can do the option of reclassing to another job.
Okay.
For that individual that may not have gotten the job that they wanted to do initially, they can reclass to another job to pursue something that they may have an interest in. I've met individuals who have at least maybe 3 or 4 jobs that they've had since serving in the Army.
Interesting. Okay. And the education, right, the money for education. So let's say you enter with for IT, but you want to go into the medical field. Can you then start taking classes towards the medical field, or do you have to take classes within your career that you selected?
No. Your educational benefits are your educational benefits. No one's going to dictate to you, hey, we need you to take classes towards this.
Okay.
That's not going to be the case at all. For someone who, for instance, someone who is in the IT field, now, one thing that is of benefit to them, their certifications, such as C+, all those different certifications for those in the IT field, they don't have to pay one red cent for any of those certifications. The Army will pay for those certifications because they know that they're making an investment not only into that individual, but into the Army as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to build upon that. But never will someone say, hey, you need to take this class because you're in this career field. No.
So you've signed up, you decided the career that you want to follow. What happens after that? I guess what I really want to know is, what is a day in the life of, you know, like, okay, you start, and what's that first day look like?
So after you've signed up, okay, and at that point you've already picked your job, you've gone back to Fort Meade to MEPS, or the Military Entrance Processing Station. And while you're at MEPS, you've done your physical, you've shown that you have the aptitude and the physical abilities to perform in the military. Okay. Once all that's been identified, we determine a date for you to leave for basic training. So basic training for the Army is in four different locations. You have Fort Benning, Georgia, Fort Sill, Oklahoma, Fort Lindenwood, Missouri, and Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Hmm. Those are the four places where you will go for basic training. Basic training is where we will transition you from civilian to soldier.
Okay.
And that's for the individuals who are on active duty or reserves.
Okay.
Just a caveat for a quick second. Active duty, like I said, is full-time. Someone who's reserves, just so to kind of clarify that as well, a reservist is a part-time soldier. They have a full-time job, or they're maybe a full-time student, whatever the case might be. But their obligation is 1 week in a month and 2 weeks during the summer for what they call annual training. And they're able to, you know, carry on with their education or whatever their civilian job might be. But one weekend, they're doing something in the IT field or medical profession, whatever the case might be, that they've chosen. And that's what they're doing as far as their commitment.
Okay.
All right. But while you're in basic training, that initial week, basic training for the Army is 10 weeks long. Okay. That initial week is what we call reception. That's where you are making sure that all your medical documents, making sure that all your, you know, shots, everything is up to date, making sure you're receiving the pay that you need to receive. Then after that, that's when you go to basic training. That's when you're learning how to fire your weapon, how to work with the individual to your left and your right to build that cohesion, that bond that we have being a service member, being a member of the United States Army. That's where that's developed there. After you complete basic training, you've completed those 9 weeks of, you know, learning what it means to be a United States Army soldier, you then go to what we call Advanced Individual Training, or AIT. While in AIT, that's where that job that you've chosen when you were with your recruiter, that's when you're learning that job training.
Okay.
And the great thing about being an AIT, depending on what job you've chosen, you're earning throughout the entire process, you're earning college credit as well. But in particular, when you're in AIT, you're earning more college credit because you're getting into the thick of what you've chosen to do. For instance, for myself, I believe I earned 33 or 34 college credits while in AIT, and I was only there for about 4 months.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty good. So, you know, let's just fast forward because I know we're kind of tight on time.
Okay.
But so sergeant, staff sergeant, what's the highest that you can get to?
So,
and how does that work? How do you go up?
The way that it works, so I'm what you call an enlisted member.
Okay.
I'm and the listed goes from E1 to E9. And then you also have E9 being sergeant major. Command sergeant major, excuse me. And then you have the sergeant major of the Army. He's the overall highest enlisted individual in the Army.
Okay.
On the officer side, which is you have the enlisted side, and then you have the officer side of the house. Mm-hmm. Officers being second lieutenant all the way to general.
Okay.
Those are the stars that you see. So those are generals. And in between those, you have what we call the warrant officer corps. So you have enlisted, you have the officers, and then you have the warrant officer corps. The warrant officer corps are those individuals who were enlisted, and they like their career field enough to where they want to become a subject matter expert in that career field.
Oh, okay.
And those are individuals who, like I said, they've served for a while. They're usually sergeant, staff sergeant, and they decide that they want to focus specifically on their career path and that's what they do within the warrant officer corps. So you have enlisted, warrant officer, and then commissioned officer.
Now, do you choose where you want to go, if you want to be officer, if you want to be enlisted, or in the middle ground?
The way that it works out, enlisted, let's say you just have a high school diploma or a GED, you're looking at the enlisted route initially. And then once you earn your bachelor's degree, if you want to become an officer, you can either do OCS, you can do ROTC, you can apply to West Point, which is the United States Military Academy. Any of those are pathways and are ways to become a United States Army officer.
Okay.
For the individuals who want to become a warrant officer, that pathway is, like I said, you were enlisted first and you decided, you know what, I like what I'm doing, but I want to take it to the next level. I want to focus specifically on that area.
Right.
And that's how you become a warrant officer. And the way you progress through your ranks, of course, adding to your education is always key, but just your overall experience, performing well, making sure that you're able to perform physically. We have what we call physical fitness tests, which at the current state involves 2 miles of running, 2 minutes of sit-ups, 2 minutes of push-ups. That making sure you're performing well with that. That's eventually going to change to the Army Combat Fitness Test.
Mm.
But that's a whole other story for another interview.
Can I walk those 2 miles? If I can walk, I can enlist. If I have to run it, I won't.
For those individuals who may have sustained an injury, what have you, you are able to do an alternate event where you can walk for 2.5 miles within a set time. But coming in right off the street, you're going to need to run those 2 miles.
I mean, it really sounds like you guys do have specific requirements, but it also sounds that you really look at the person and try to work with them and get them to where they want to be. I mean, it sounds like the Army is very, very friendly, which is not a picture that I've had in my mind. You know, no offense to you.
None taken.
But I think that we are, as I mean, we just see it as this big institution that is just so tough and so strong. But it sounds like in the inside, it's really just a human institution. We kind of forget that, you know?
And I'm glad that you brought that up. A lot of people, the biggest issue that we've encountered, even within Howard County, is a lot of people are just misinformed.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, they view the Army as this hardened institution where you don't have any humanity. You're almost a robot, and that's not the case at all. We are an institution where we defend America's freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not set that aside.
Right.
But we still are human like everyone else. We just chose to raise our right hand and say that, hey, we will support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And for myself, my decision was, one, I wanted to join for financial stability, but it was something that I saw my father do for so many years that I was like, you know what? I want to do what the old man did, you know, and I followed in my father's footsteps. And just like his approach with myself and my two sisters, he never said, hey, son, you should go join or you need to go. He never did that. And I'm not going to do that to Peyton or Langston. I'm going to let them make that decision. And I'm going to support them 100% when they make that decision. But it's never a thing where the Army is going to. I don't want people to have the perception that the Army is just this institution where if you're not this just, you know, cold-blooded, hardcore individual, that it's not the place for you. No. We have over 150 different jobs in the Army. Only about 20 of them are combat-related jobs. The remaining of those jobs—
That's a minority, really, when you look at it.
Yeah. It truly is. A majority of the jobs in the Army are jobs that have a civilian counterpart. I mean, just how we're sitting here in the radio station right now and doing this broadcast, we have a job just for that in the Army where somebody sits down. Like when we're stationed overseas, we have our own radio stations. We have our own TV stations that are run by military personnel.
Wow, that's very cool. That's cool. And thank you for that. Thank you for reminding us all that it is, you know, it is this institution that's out there to defend. But those defending us are humans, just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Just to close our broadcast here on the radio station, any last words for those people listening? And then we'll stay on Facebook. I see that there's at least one question on there that I want to ask you. So any closing thoughts for those listening to us?
For anyone that's listening, if it's something that you've ever considered and you're thinking about, well, if I go talk, a lot of the, one of the biggest misconceptions that we have is if you sit down and talk with the Army recruiter, you're joining the Army right then and there.
Yes. And I went through that.
Yeah. And understand, folks, that's not the case at all. When you sit down with the Army recruiter, be it myself, my counterpart, Sergeant Floyd, anyone else in our office, or any Army recruiter that you encounter, that initial interview is that. It's an interview.
Right.
And depending on how that interview goes, that will determine if we want to move forward and if you want to move forward. Hopefully we've done our job and presented everything to you to where you're like, you know what? This is going to be a benefit to me. But understand, folks, it doesn't – you're not – I've had people say, oh, I don't want to sign my life away. You're not signing your life away, first and foremost.
Right.
If anything, you're signing up for something that's bigger than yourself that will open up a lot of doors that otherwise would have remained closed.
And where can people contact you guys if they're interested in having that first initial conversation?
Well, if they would like to reach out to us, they can. We're actually in the old MedStar Health Building. We're actually located at 5565 Sterrett Place here in Columbia. Or if they want to call the office, they can contact us at 410-964-8420. Or you can go to the Go Army website and find and do the locator recruiter and direct you to the Columbia Army Recruiting Station.
It's very, very, very friendly, very user friendly, very easy to find them. And we're going to close out our stream here now. I know I'm over time, but it's just been a really interesting conversation. We're going to stay on Facebook for a little bit. So thank you for listening. We'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend.
See you guys.
So I see a question here. It says from Kevin Brown. He says, can I go special forces or get a job with a top secret clearance?
So the way that that works out, and thank you for that question, Kevin. So for special forces, one of the requirements with that, you have to be 21 years old. Okay. Yeah. A lot of people think in order to join special forces, you can do that right out of high school. That's not the case. For special forces, they are the special forces of the Army. They have a very specific job.
Okay.
And with that, those individuals, they want someone who's a little bit more mature, more willing to work with the individual to their left and their right to handle things.
So can you sign up initially for that, or do you have to have certain years within the Army before you can sign up for the special forces?
For someone who is 21 years of age, currently special forces is still
Okay.
I'll have to verify, but I still believe it's still only males for special forces at this time.
Okay.
But that being the case, you can enlist under what they call an 18 X-ray contract or a special forces candidate contract. Actually, my brother-in-law, I convinced my brother-in-law to join the Army, and he actually is under a special forces contract, and he joined at 29.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
And he's been doing well with these. We went to Fort Benning for basic training, what they call one station unit training there. He went to airborne school. He's now at Fort Bragg going through the process. So,
okay.
Kudos to him for that. As far as pursuing jobs with a top secret security clearance, that is very possible in the Army. That's actually what I did when I chose to be an intelligence analyst. And key on that, I chose to be an intelligence analyst. No one told me that, hey, this is the job that you're going to do. I made that decision that allowed me to have access and to earn a top secret security clearance for my job.
All right. I have a couple other questions. There is Brandon Marlowe. He says, does the Army recruit physician assistants with a PA school acceptance letter or only once people have graduated from PA programs?
What was his name again?
Brendan.
For Brendan? All right. Brendan, as far as that, what I would recommend to you, if you would reach out to what we call AMED recruiting or Army Medical Recruiting. I believe they're in Ellicott City. Again, going to Go Army and search for medical recruiting. And they will be able
to. So you can select in their career that you're looking specifically for within the Army and find a recruiter specific for that career.
Yeah. So for Big Army, we recruit, we don't recruit certain specialties. So individuals who may have maybe a medical professional or, say, an attorney or even a chaplain, they're specific recruiters for those.
I would have never thought a lawyer, you know, or a chaplain, you know, that you guys recruit those specific careers. I understand medics, but
yes,
interesting.
The way you can look at the Army, we're for an installation, it's a self-sustaining city. on our, like for instance, Fort Meade, we have our own legal office. We have our own commissary, what we call a, we have a grocery store. We have a postal exchange, or which is like our Walmart. We have our own high schools, our own elementary school, middle school, all that's on the installation.
Okay.
So it's a self-sustaining city, a city.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off as you were answering to Brandon. So he can contact the recruiter, and you think that it's in Ellicott City?
Yes, it's in Ellicott City, and but it's AMED recruiting. So just pursue that, Brendan, and they'll be able to provide you better guidance as far as the PA recruitment process.
Excellent. I have Damikas, I think is how you read it, and he says, can I join with a green card?
Actually, thank you for that question, Damikas. You are able to join the Army with a green card. If you are a permanent resident in the U.S., you are able to join the Army.
But you have to have some certain kind of either a green card or be a citizen. If somebody is in transition with a student visa or other type of status, is that a possibility?
If someone's here under a visa, unfortunately, they are not able to join.
Okay.
But if you are a permanent resident or a U.S. citizen, that is a you are able to join the United States Army.
Now, for those with green card, will you guys be able to facilitate the process of getting their citizenship as well?
Yes. For those individuals who do hold a green card, as they're going through the process, we'll have them fill out additional paperwork for naturalization.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll go along with them to basic training. That'll be part of their packet that will lead to them receiving their citizenship.
How about students under DACA? Would they qualify for the military or no?
They would not, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. I had to ask that hard question.
No, I understand.
Alex here, she says, somehow my old comment got removed. I was wondering if the guest news staff, Sergeant Edison Hermond, who lived in the area and served in the Air Force until he joined the Army National Guard in 2009. He passed away in the Ellicott City flood of last year, and it was a close friend of mine. Do you happen to know? So the name is Staff Sergeant Edison Hermond. H-E-R.
He was the only person killed in the Ellicott City flood last year.
I remember hearing about that. I did not know him personally, but definitely it was a tragic loss.
Yeah.
But you know, that's his sacrifice definitely was something that does not go unnoticed. We appreciate what he did while there for the flood. And just him deciding, him providing service.
Yeah. You know, that's one thing that both scares me and, you know, at the same time, I think drives people into the Army, that idea of defending others and, you know, jumping into action when needed, like he did, right? Mm-hmm. He was trying to help somebody. And his life, unfortunately, was taken away, you know, by just really being a good citizen, right? Which is what we all should be. But you guys take it an extra, you know, like, not just 1 mile, but extra like 10 miles with everything that you guys do. So what would you tell people? Because I know you said that only 20 out of the 150 jobs, right, that you offer are actually in combat. So, I mean, maybe break that myth, because that's, I think, another one of the myths that's out there, that you're going to be out in the lines and you're going to be fighting others and that your life is always in danger if you join the Army. I think it's an idea that we have. So what could we tell people to maybe put them at ease?
So to kind of to put people at ease, like I said, there are only, like I said, the 20 jobs in the Army that are combat focused. The other jobs, the biggest thing I want you to understand, whatever job you've chosen, the job that you're doing here in the States will be the same job that you'll do in a combat environment. Okay.
So if you get deployed, it's not that you're going to be sent into a different job that you did not sign up for, that you're not going to be, okay.
So for myself, I joined as an intelligence analyst. I work in a office behind a computer doing analysis. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do. So when I was in Afghanistan, I was doing the same thing. I was working on a computer, developing my job. That's what I was doing. And it's the same for individuals who are in the logistics field or the IT field. They're there to make sure that the computers are still working, that we're up on the network, things like that. For those in the logistics, they're there to make sure that we receive the supplies that we need to be able to, you know, to do what we need to do in that environment. Now, don't don't think that we're not in harm's way when we're mm-hmm. in a deployed environment, but we're not the individuals on the front line. We're not, say, an infantryman or a CAV scout, which are those combat jobs. Those are the individuals that are out there in the thick of it and you know, bringing America to the enemy's front door, so right. to speak. But
how often do you get deployed? Is there like a time where... Do you get a break, I guess, from deployment?
Yes. So depending on what unit you're, depending on which unit you're assigned to, will determine how the deployment cycle goes.
Okay.
It's a cycle. You'll have time where you're deployed, time where you're back home. There'll be train up, but it's a cycle. It's not that, hey, you just got back from deployment last week. Take a week with your family. Hey, we're going back out. We're going back over there. No.
Okay.
It's a time. You have to, the Army realized after so many years of being at war that you can't wear down soldiers. You can't do it, you know. Having to understand that, hey, we have to take this time to make sure that they're properly trained, that they have time with their family. The Army is really big on family. I don't want that to not be mentioned as well.
I'm glad you're bringing that up, because I don't think that that's something that I equate the Army with. Army family, mm-hmm. I actually equated with separation, if anything, yeah. just because of the career.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely big on family. We have what we call family readiness groups. These are groups that are set up to make sure that if you are going to be in a deployed environment, your family's taken care of. They reach out to them, make sure that they're doing what, you know, they're receiving all that they need to receive. Not only that, but we have what we call family days, where we'll get together as a unit. We just had one last Friday. We went to the park. We had a nice little barbecue, you know, with the soldiers and all the families in our company. And, you know, we just had the opportunity just to come together and not talk about work, but just to have fun, you know, eat some great food and have some great times.
That's great. So the Mikas actually has another question. He says, will I be set back as far as my education if I join the Army and stop college?
Again, Demigas, thank you for that question. You will not be set back in your education at all.
Right. You continue to earn credits even as you're on basic training, right?
Yes. You're able to earn credits while you're on active duty. Even if you're a reservist, you're still able to earn, you're still earning those same credits, just not in the same capacity.
And you can have it paid for.
Yeah, exactly. You can have it paid for. So if you're someone on active duty, I had a young soldier. She was a graduate of Texas A&M. She already had her bachelor's degree. Kind of like myself, I came in with my bachelor's degree. And while we were stationed in Germany, she was able to pursue her master's degree while on full time. And while we were in Germany, our operation tempo was very high. We were constantly training, working with our foreign partners. But she was determined to earn her master's degree, and she did that while on active duty service.
Mm-hmm. So you can definitely continue to further your education. It is definitely something that can be done. So it sounds like you should definitely get in touch with Demikas, with Staff Sergeant, or with the Army, with your recruiter in the area where you are. So let's just remind everybody, and with that, I guess we can get ready to close our broadcast today. Where can they contact you guys? How can they find information? Let's just make sure that everybody knows how to get in touch.
Again, if they're trying to get in contact with their local Army recruiter here in the Columbia area, you can first go to goarmy.com and, you know, search for a recruiter near me. Or if you like, you can give us a call at our office. Our number is 410-964-8420. Or you can come by the office. Just stop on by. And our address is 5565 Sterrett Place, Suite 100, right here in Columbia.
It's the Old Man Star Hill.
We're there Monday through Friday. Sometimes we may be there on Saturday. It just depends. But usually we're there from 9 to about 7, give or take.
See, so regular office hours, that's, yes. You know, you don't think of the Army as regular office hours. You think 24/7, 365, but that's not the case. So thanks for breaking those myths, and thank you for, you know, bringing that human picture, the human side of the Army, you know, to everybody who was listening and watching us today. So I really appreciate that.
No problem. I really do appreciate you all having us.
And with that, we're going to close. Have a wonderful Thursday, and we'll be back on Monday.
Hopefully it warms up by then.
Yes.
That'll be nice.
We'll yes, yes, then. Yes. Enjoy the sun today. We don't know if it's going to stay.
Fingers crossed.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.